John Palmer and John Blickman join me this week to discuss all grain brewing essentials. This is Beersmith Podcast number 207.
This is the Beersmith Home Brewing Show, where brewing great beer is our passion. If you want to take your brewing to the next level, visit beersmith.com, where you can download a trial version of our Beersmith software, subscribe to the newsletter, and get dozens of free articles on home brewing. And now, your host and the author of Home Brewing with Beersmith, Brad Smith.
This is Beersmith Podcast number 207, and it's late January 2020. John Palmer and John Blickman join me this week to discuss all grain brewing essentials. Thank you to this week's sponsors, Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Every issue of Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine is packed with articles for homebrewers and beer lovers. They're currently offering 20% off their all-access subscription pass, with access to videos, brewing courses, exclusive articles, and the Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Go to beerandbrewing.com/beersmith to get your all-access pass today. Again, that's beerandbrewing.com/beersmith. And also the BrewEasy. Brew big in small spaces with the best all-grain ultra-compact system available. The BrewEasy's revolutionary setup combines batch barge efficiency, brew-in-a-bag simplicity, and the work clarification of a rim system. It's easy to set up, easy to operate, and easy on the eyes. Add the optional Brew Commander for precise temperature control and mash automation. With the BrewEasy, you'll discover the definitive proof that size isn't everything. Electric and propane models are available. It's also the system that I brew on. Visit BlickmanEngineering.com for more information. Again, that's BlickmanEngineering.com. And then I recently converted the BeersmithRecipes.com website to support mobile devices and also added a majority of the Beersmith brewing and conversion tools to the site. Subscribers to Beersmith can access over 17 brewing tools online from any device, and anyone with an account can browse tens of thousands of recipes. Visit BeersmithRecipes.com from your phone or computer to learn more. And now let's jump into this week's episode. Today on the show, I welcome back John Palmer, the author of the top-selling books, How to Brew, as well as Water and Brewing Classic Styles. How you doing, John?
I'm doing great. Great to be here.
Joining him is John Blickman, the president of Blickman Engineering.
How you guys doing? Glad to be here, too.
That's great. Great to have John and John here. I'm probably going to refer to them as Palmer and Blickman, though, because I got too many Johns. Otherwise, it'll start getting really confusing. Let's start with you, Mr. Blickman. You and John are teaching a class called All Grain Essentials at the upcoming BYO Boot Camp. Can you tell us a little bit about the boot camp itself?
Yeah, it's a really fun event and a little different than a lot of the other seminars that you'll go to. Specifically, what's great about it is you really get to go super in depth into a couple topics that you'd like to for the day. So, for example, John Palmer and I are teaching the class on all grain essentials, which is great for beginning brewers all the way through intermediate brewers. And what's nice is you're with us in a small group. I think it's limited to 35 people, and we're in there all day. So it's very one-on-one, very interactive. We're going to be we'll have three brewing setups that will be simultaneously brewing three batches of beer and talking from everything about, you know, details of malting to grain crushing to water chemistry, and going over three different types of brewing. And, you know, it's great because it's super interactive. You can ask a lot of different questions, and it's real fun because you get to really get to know each other too. It's kind of fun. So, and probably at least a dozen topics that you can take over the period of the weekend. And then there's also one day doing something a little different this year. There's one day where it's more like a number of 1 hour sessions that you can, that we talk to everybody about all sorts of different topics. So,
yeah, I think the first day there's classrooms all day and then a reception in the afternoon. And I think the second day is, and I'm teaching as well. The second day, it's a handful of selected speakers are going to speak, I think in like 45 minute increments, doing seminar, more of a seminar format. And then the third day, again, all day classes, right?
Right.
Right.
So your class in particular, though, John, is focused on all grain essentials for people that are perhaps just starting to get into all grain. Is that right?
Which John?
Blickman.
Yeah. You know, it's great for somebody who's never all grain brewed or is just starting to all grain brew. But even if you've all grain brewed before, it's a great primer for all the different topics, you know, particularly how water wraps up into it, measuring pH, you know, just kind of getting comfortable that you're doing things, you know, the correct way, that you can kind of see a few different ways to all grain brew, because all grain brewing has really changed a lot the past, you know, 2 to 3 years, as far as the different systems that are out there. And you can kind of learn the benefits and drawbacks of each type. So it's a great class in that regard. So
yeah, of course the hands-on aspect's really cool as well. I think you're gonna have Blickman equipment there, right?
Yeah, we'll have we'll be brewing on the new Anvil Foundry, the Brew Easy, and then also one of our horizontal systems. So you'll be able to check out you know, the fly sparging. I know a lot of people are you know, can be intimidated by that, and we just kind of go through how that's done, and we do it on real simple, just a regular cooler, nothing super fancy, and you know, then learn about a couple different other type of systems that are out there that people are all grain brewing on. So
I think one essential aspect of the classes too are that you have all day to ask us questions, you know, as you think of them, as you see us doing something or talking about something, you know. It's often hard to think of questions, you know, ahead of time, but you know, we're going to be there. So it does give a lot more chance for interaction.
Oh, it is great. And you'll be the one actually in there brewing too. We're bringing the equipment. We'll get you guys all involved and actually getting your hands dirty and getting in there.
And I have an outline of the course. And Mr. Palmer, could you start with a little bit about malt, which I think is one of the first sections you're going to cover?
Sure. Yeah, we're going to talk about what malt actually is. Why is it malt? And then we're going to get into, you know, aspects of modification and what that means for your mashing methods. We're going to talk about, you know, the crush and the grist. You know, just we're really going to lay out a comprehensive, you know, agenda on what is malt and what is mashing.
So, what are some of the basic characteristics of malt that that you might be covering? That, you know, things that are important for an all grain brewer.
Well, things like the degree of modification is really one of the most important. Malting and mashing are very interrelated. I mean, it's all about converting starches in the grain to fermentable sugars, and that actually starts in the malting process. Breaking down the protein carbide matrix in the kernel and releasing those starches to make them available for the brewer. So we're going to, you know, lay that out and explain all the nitty-gritty details and how it affects the mashing that you eventually do.
And of course, the purpose is to develop those enzymes really that play a big role in breaking down the sugar chains during the mash, right?
Right. Yeah. all the aspects of the enzymes, when they're released, how much and how well, all of those aspects are related to the malting process, and then the temperature rest that you do in the mash. So we're going to lay that out and make it pretty plain.
John Blickman, a lot of brewers are not aware how important the grain crush is to getting good extraction in the mash. Can you talk about what a good crush actually looks like and why it matters?
Yeah, we get that question pretty frequently, and it usually starts with my grain bed keeps sticking. Yeah. What's going on? And we talk about...
I've done that myself a couple times.
Yeah. So we, you know, we talk about the... that kernel and how you're breaking it open, and then the different pieces of it that you need a amount of whole husk, you know, intact as much as possible. You need some coarse grits, some fine grits, and then you'll also end up with some flour. And I'll actually bring a sieve set along for the class, and you can actually see what those pieces of grain individually look like, and you can also see it in aggregate, and you can get a good idea of what a normal crush should be. So
what's the best kind of crusher to use if I'm looking to get into all grain?
You know, really for the home brewer, you know, in old school was the old Corona mills, because that's what was available, in the, you know, in the dark days of home brewing. But they kind of shredded up the husk a little bit. So now pretty much what you'll see out there are roller mills that have like knurls on them, and there's, you know, at least a dozen manufacturers out there, and all, if set properly, can make a really good crush for you. So that's something that we'll talk about. You know, we get a lot, what gap should I use? And, you know, and the answer is it depends. And it all boils down to getting that crush to look like what you want it to look like. And
so that looks, I assume that looks like something where you've got large pieces of husk, but still a fairly fine flour inside, right?
Well, you'll have a portion of all of it. What you don't want is husk and just pure flour, because you're going to get a big gummy mess that's going to be hard to louder. So you need a portion of grits, you know, coarser grits, fine grits, and some flour. And then, of course, your hulls intact as much as possible. If you shred those up into little teeny bits, they don't act as that porous media for wort to flow through and keep your louder running.
And I know one problem I've had is occasionally I'll get it done at the store and it's not really quite right. Have you seen it?
Yeah, you'll have people that will go in and adjust the mill and not readjust it back, or, you know, there's been some wear on the mill, or somebody's, you know, for, we'll talk about, you know, some people for brewing a bag will crush it super fine because they're not really loudering. And sometimes the mill gets set back there, and then you go to run a fly sparge and it just clogs up the works because the mill wasn't quite set right. Yeah. So, you know, while you're at the store, you can even look and go, yep, that's the correct kind of crush that I want before you send your whole batch through there. And, you know, we can even, you know, that's also one of the rationales for getting your own mill is, you know, it's always going to be the same. And that's, you know, we'll talk about this in just a little bit with efficiency, but it's more important to know what your efficiency is than what the actual efficiency number is.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, we're going to talk about that in just a minute. But Mr. Palmer, could you walk us through the basic mashing process? You know, what do you actually do? What actually happens?
Sure. So in mashing, what you're doing is you're re-wetting the grain. You're getting it all nice and full of water. And that allows the enzymes to come free and access the starches. You know, you've crushed up this malt, you've provided more surface area, and now the natural enzymes that are in the malt can access those starches and start converting them to sugars. There's different classes of enzymes that are active in the mash. Some are more utilized during the malting process, such as your beta glucanase and protein rests. That's all mostly done during malting. When it comes to mashing time, these days, you know, the malts are very well modified. They have high enzyme levels. You really only have to do a single step infusion mash to get complete conversion of the sugars and a very high extract from the malt, somewhere in the neighborhood of 150 to 155 degrees Fahrenheit generally does it. That's about all there is to it. The mash proceeds quite easily, and then it's just a matter of either draining off the sugars, the sugar water, and rinsing it if you want to get a little bit more.
So it's a, you know, it's a fairly simple process. You take your crushed grain, add some hot water, get it to a set temperature, and then leave it, right, for a while.
That's right. Yeah. So many things, you know, it's very easy to actually do. If you start digging into the science of it a little bit, then it seems very complicated and lots of, you know, different options you can do. But yeah, very quite easy to do.
And you start getting into more sophisticated stuff like mash pH and worried about other things, right?
Right, right.
Well, Mr. Blickman, can you walk us through, you're the equipment master, can you walk us through some of the options for mashing equipment? Things like brewing a bag, all-in-one, no sparge, and other large, yeah, three-tier systems.
Yeah, sure. You know, just carrying one last thing on with John, the all-grain brewing can come across as pretty complicated and be a little bit intimidating. And that's what's really nice is that first time you go through it, you know, I can guarantee you're going to have some problems, but that's okay. That's part of the learning process. But the nice thing with the classes, we'll be there to help actually show you and walk you through it. And it can become a lot less intimidating. But as far as the equipment goes, probably the easiest and you'll hear a lot about now is brew in a bag. That really started with paint strainer bags and people really trying to brew on a budget. And it's a one kettle system. So you heat all of your strike water, all the water you need for your brewing session, and in your kettle, and you put it
right in the boil kettle, right?
Right in the boil kettle, and you take this large fine mesh strainer bag and put that in there. Put your grains in, stir it all up, cover it up, wait your prescribed amount of time, and then just lift the bag up out and let all the wort drain through. You know, that's about as simple as you can make the mashing process.
And it's fairly cheap to do, right? I mean, you just need one big kettle and a grain bag.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And also less to clean, I think too, right?
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward. You know, you've kind of collected all of the grain up out of the bag. You dump the bag, rinse it out with a sprayer, and lay it up to dry, and you're pretty well to go, ready to go there. And the bags are pretty inexpensive in the neighbor, you know, somewhere between $30 to $40, typically, something like that. They last a pretty long time. You have to be careful not to tear them on your thermometer or things like that. But, you know, there are some drawbacks with brewing a bag. You don't get quite the malt or the clarity that you do with some of the other systems. So you're bringing a little bit of the husk material and those sort of things into your finished wort. But they can make great beer too. Some of the next step up and what people are really seeing a lot are the all-in-one systems, like the Grainfather, the Robo Brew, we've got the Anvil Foundry on our end, and essentially it's an electric heated kettle, and instead of a bag, you have a basket that's perforated on the bottom. So that process can be very similar to that. But what's nice about it is you've got temperature control. So while you're mashing, you can actually maintain temperatures a little closer than you could with the bag. Otherwise, you have to lift the bag and heat the water a little bit to make up for temperature losses and then drop the bag back in. So the all-in-one systems kind of take care of that for you, but it's a little bit more expensive having that, but it's pretty darn convenient. So you just lift that basket up and same thing. You can also do some recirculation with those where you pump the wort from the bottom and put it on top of the grain and circulate through, which helps maintain temperatures. And you can also do some temperature ramping. And there's reasons for that we can get into later, but it can help some efficiency and really tweak your recipe in. Then there's the what I would call the ultimate system, which is the three vessel, otherwise known as fly sparging, where after you've mashed, you'd start draining out of your mash tun and adding hot water to the top of the mash to really rinse those grains out. It's very efficient. You get a very clear wort, and it's it's probably the most equipment that you'll need in a system, but it also gives you the most control. And, you know, a lot of that is just fun. That's part of the hobby, having all that equipment.
Yeah. So, I mean, you have go over the three, you mentioned three tiers, go over the three vessels. And I think they each have a heating element as well, right?
Right. You'll have your boil kettle, which of course will be heated. You'll have your mash tun, which could be heated if you want. That's like an optional thing. Some people will directly heat it if it's gas, or if it's electric, you'll run it either. You'll heat your mash tun either with like a remote mounted heating element called a RIMS tube, recirculation infusion mash system is what that stands for. Or just a coil of tubing inside of your hot liquor tank that can be used. And then, of course, the third vessel is your hot liquor tank. It provides all the brewing water you need for the session. And then, of course, there's even a hybrid in between some of those. One that we developed is called
the one I have.
Yep, that's what you've gotten. It's a two-vessel system. So you've got your boil kettle on the bottom that's heated, and you've got your mash tun that sits up on the top. And then there's a tube that goes between your mash tun and your boil kettle, and use that to recirculate, to clarify the wort, to maintain the temperature in it, to do any ramp steps. And when you're done with your mash, you just let that drain into your boil kettle. Remove the grain and remove the mash tun, and then now you're in your boil kettle. So it's kind of a good combination between the basic systems and the advanced three vessel systems.
Yeah, I kind of stepped over you when you're talking there. It's a Brew Easy, it's called, right?
Right, yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, very nice little system.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I use at home. It's a good, you know, we talk about the different things like, you know, time savings, efficiency differences, work quality differences and things like that. And it's really different for every individual person as to what is important to that brewer. So, you know, we go, you know, over those things in great detail too.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Palmer, most of us, you mentioned this earlier, most of us have settled into a single step mash because, you know, the modern malts are all highly modified, but can you tell us about, you know, what a single step, where, you know, first of all, where do you do your single step mash? And then talk about maybe some of the other temperature rests, that can be used for mashing.
Sure. Well, excuse me, the enzymes that we're seeking to use are the alpha and beta amylases. Beta amylases are denature at a little lower temperature than the alpha. They tend to denature once you get up to that 150 degree mark, whereas the alpha are active all the way up to 160, 165. So what we do is we select a mashing temperature that is kind of a compromise of the two, and that's generally around 150 to 155 degrees.
Do you know that in Celsius? Because I know I always get people asking.
Sure. That's 65 degrees Celsius, 149 degrees Fahrenheit. So 65 to 67, 68 degrees Celsius is that range. You can also do protein rests at lower temperatures if you're brewing with a lot of adjuncts, or if you're doing some unmalted grains like flaked wheat, flaked corn, flaked barley, then, you know, protein rests can be useful when you're doing that kind of brewing. But essentially, you can you're doing that single infusion, or you can break it out a little bit and do a multiple step infusion where you're going to target first that beta amylase temperature, which is more like at 145 degrees Fahrenheit or somewhere in the 62 to 65 degree range Celsius, and allow the mash to rest at that temperature for 15, 20 minutes, half an hour. Really work on creating lots of maltose, the primary brewing sugar that's very fermentable. And then you can step up to the alpha amylase rest back up around 155 degrees Fahrenheit, 67 Celsius, and ensure that a lot of the larger dextrins get broke down well, and really increase the fermentability of your wort that way.
Excellent. Any other rests you want to cover? I know there's a whole bunch of them you can potentially do, but a lot of them aren't used as much in modern brewing, right?
Yeah. I don't want to get into it here because it would take too long. But we will cover them all in the class.
And they're rarely used, to be honest. So,
right. Yeah. They are covered in How to Brew as well.
Yeah, that's true. Mr. Blickman, how do we know when the mash is done? And can you walk us through the lautering process? You already talked about brewing a bag, just pull the bag out. But what is a more complicated lautering process look like?
You know, a more complicated lautering process, you know, there's something called a mash out. And that's bringing the wort up to about 168 degrees or so. What's that in Celsius, Palmer? 70, something like that.
Ish.
That basically stops all the enzymatic process. But what it also does is it thins the wort out a little bit, just makes it easier to flow through the grain bed. So you can pick up a percentage point or so of efficiency. But, you know, the key thing is just to make it a little easier to louder and also to stop your mashing process. But how you know when you're done and ready for that? There's a couple different ways that I use. One, I'm tracking the specific gravity of the wort as I'm mashing, just to kind of check on things and see how it's going. And when you see a stop in increase in specific gravity, that's a pretty good indicator that you're done or close to being done. And then a real simple test.
You're done lautering, not done mashing, right? Yeah.
Well, actually, just to see that you're done with your mashing process.
Oh, okay. You know,
yeah. So I'm going to check the specific gravity as I go. And then I'm also going to be checking, it's a real simple test with just a little drop of iodine. I take some iodine on a little white, or a little tablespoon of the mash on a white plate, and then put a little drop of iodine. If it turns black, you know that there's still starch in there. If it remains purple, then you know you've pretty well cleared all the starch out of there. And typically, that's going to be anywhere between as little as half an hour to an hour, sometimes an hour and a half if you're really mashing at a lower temperature. And those are pretty straightforward things. So at that time, then you could start your what you call loutering, which is the rinsing process. And as you mentioned, for brewing a bag, that's simply lifting the bag, or the all-in-one systems, that's lifting the grain basket and resting it on the top. Mm. For the brew easy, that's pretty much just turning the pump off, and it'll drain and you're doing your rinsing. Now, with the fly sparging, that's where you're adding in one more process. And that is, with the rinsing or sparging, you're putting hot water on the top, typically 170 to 174 degree water, what they call hot liquor. You're going to slowly pour that on the top of the grain bed. At the same time, you're draining at the bottom of the mash tun over to your brew kettle. And you want to do that at a pretty slow rate. You know, typically be done with that process in about 45 minutes is pretty common. So what you don't want to do is just turn the valves on and blast the hot liquor in with a hose, or you're not going to get all the potential wort out of that mash.
Yeah, you're trying not to disturb that grain bed, I think, most cases, right?
Right. You want to keep that grain bed, because that grain bed is also, you know, it gets a little firmer as you go, and it actually acts as a filter. So that's one thing you really notice with the fly sparging systems and some of the other systems that recirculate. You get very clear, crystal clear wort, which is pretty nice. So some of that, you just have to balance the inflow and the outflow of the wort so that it doesn't overflow or doesn't run dry. But the key is just to go at a nice slow pace, and it's not as difficult as what it seems. And you'll be able to see that in live action.
Mr. Palmer, A lot of all grain brewers obsess over their brew house efficiency. Can you tell us, right, first of all, what brew house efficiency is, and then maybe a little bit about why it matters?
Sure. Well, with efficiency, we're talking about how much extract we get from our grain, how much sugar, and the laboratory amount that they quote on their malt analysis sheets is about 80% by weight. That is 80% of the dry weight of the malt, 1 pound of malt, 80% of that weight would be extracted as soluble extract, as sugar and some proteins and stuff. When we brew, we're not doing it in the lab. We're not sparging for an hour and a half like they do in the laboratory method. And so we get a little bit less extract. And we'll typically get, say, like 80 to 90% of the laboratory value. And from there, you also have to factor in your lautering efficiency. How well do you extract the sugars from that grain bed, and how well do you rinse the grain bed? You may end up leaving, you know, say 5% of your extract behind. And so this also adds into efficiency. So what we're talking about with efficiency is, you know, how much total extract do we achieve in our boil kettle from the amount of grain that we used in the mash?
And that's the mash efficiency, right?
Yeah, that's the mashing. And when you're looking at, you know, your total volume of wort that you've collected in your boil kettle, we're also talking about lautering efficiency as well. So it's our entire brewing efficiency that we're capturing when we measure the volume and gravity of the wort that we collect in our boil kettle.
Mm-hmm. And then brew house efficiency is just a little bit different than that, even, because now you start to take into account losses after the mashing process that happen, you know, in the boil, and you lose, you know, you lose some wort and all that stuff. So
yeah,
when we talk about brew house efficiency
and stuff,
right? So we talk about brew house efficiency, we're really talking about how many gravity points do you get into the fermenter, right?
Yeah. Into the boil kettle and then into the fermenter. Hopefully you're not losing too much in, from the boil kettle to the fermenter. You're going to lose some wort to the tube in the boil kettle. You may lose some wort to the hoses, the volume in the hoses as well. So, yeah, those enter into it. As you say, the total brew house efficiency. Mm-hmm. Again, we're referring back to that, to the amount of malt that we used, the amount of, you know, 80% by weight of sugar that we could expect from that, and how much do we actually get into the fermenter.
And how much effort is it worthwhile to, you know, extract another 1 or 2% of your out of your system, really? I mean, a lot of people obsess over this number, like, oh, I only get, you know, 70% and it's not good enough.
Yeah. It's important to measure it as you go, because you want to understand, you know, did I mash well? And generally everybody will. You're going to get good conversion of your starches to sugars, and you should have an efficient mash. Then you want to look at, did I have an efficient lautering system? Did I have efficient sparge? Did I get all of the sugar that I expected into my boil kettle, et cetera, et cetera? And especially if you're a commercial brewer, you know, you're talking about money. So, you know, paying attention to these details and trying to fine-tune these details is important if you're trying to make money. If you're a hobbyist, if you're a home brewer, and you're not, you know, obsessing over every, you know, teaspoon of wort that you've left behind somewhere, you can easily make that up with another dollar's worth of grain, and, you know, wave your hand at any losses that occur along the way. You've still got, you know, 5 or 6 gallons of wort going into your fermenter that's hit your target gravity. You know, what's an extra dollar?
But still, so, understanding that number is important, because now that's going to help you develop the next recipe and know how much grain you need for the next one, right?
Right. And as you said earlier, knowing your efficiency number, your general number, is important. For most brewers, that's in the 75% area. maybe it could be anywhere from 70 to 80% brew house efficiency. And that will help you, as you say, calculate recipe amounts, grain amounts, and so on when you're developing your own recipes.
Now, Mr. Blickman, I wanted to cover some of the things that can go wrong or often do go wrong in the brewing process. One of the first ones is, what do you do if you miss your temperature? You know, you don't get to the temperature you want.
Generally, if you don't get to the temperature that you want, you're going to make a more fermentable sugar, and you may need to mash for just a little bit longer. It really depends how long. I mean, if you hit it, you know, if you're down there in the 130s, you need to find a way to heat it up. But if you know, if you're off 2 or 3 degrees, I wouldn't get too worked up about it. And work on that for the next time and adjust your strike temperature, for example. But if you're off too far on temperature, you need to try to find a way to heat it. But if you just hit it low, say you were shooting for 152 and you're in the 148, you'll likely just make a more fermentable wort, and the beer will taste just a little bit different, but it's still going to be just fine.
And of course, one of the advantages of some of the more advanced systems is you can dial that right in. But
that is one of the advantages, but then it does take a little bit more sophistication. And some can be as simple as just adding more some boiling water to it.
Hot or cold water, right?
Yeah, or cold water. If you overshoot, that's one of the easiest things, is just to add some cold water to it and stir that in and get it to the right temperature. And realize it's not like an instantaneous reaction and it's done. You know, so don't panic. You've got time to get to make some adjustments. Too hot, it's super simple to add some cold water. That's real fast. If you're too cold, you're going to need to add some boiling water. If you have a three kettle system, you can add some strike water because you've already got that heated. Otherwise, you'll have to take some time and heat that water up. So that becomes a little bit of a challenge if you go a little too low.
Yeah. And Mr. Palmer, what do you do if you miss your original gravity? So let's say you go through this multi-hour process to mash your wort and boil it down, and now you end up quite often too low.
Well, the easy thing to do is just add some malt extract that will, a little bit of instant wort, if you will.
Some of the dry stuff?
Yeah, some of the dry stuff. Good to keep a bag of that around. You also have the option of boiling a little longer to make up some of those points. But that does tend to change the flavor of the beer slightly. I mean, this is the cooking part of the brewing process, the boil. So, you within reason, a little extra boiling time doesn't change anything. But if you do it longer, say a half an hour longer or even an hour longer, now you start overcooking the wort a little bit, and you will change the flavors, generating these Maillard reactions we talk about, flavor compounds. But generally, just adding some malt extract if you're low, or adding a little bit more water if you're high to your target gravity will take care of the problem.
And Mr. Blickman, what are some of the other problems you run into? I know I've done all kinds of things on my system, forget to turn on a pump or turn on a heater forget to add an ingredient.
Some of these you can really prevent going back a little bit further, and that is measurement. Making sure you're actually taking accurate measurements, not you think you're taking accurate measurements, that can help prevent some of the problems in the first place, is really knowing that you're measuring accurately and carefully. That will help you and track it. That will actually help you not be low on specific gravity because you actually took care of that in advance. Some of the other problems we see are, it's probably one of the ones we see most often, is a stuck sparge. Anybody that has, done any kind of fly sparging has done that on occasion. And the big thing there is make sure you're not using too fine of a crush, and go, you'll realize how quickly or how fast you can actually either recirculate through there or how quickly you can drain through there. And you need to just go at a slower pace so that you don't compact your grain bed and cause it to stop flowing. You know, some of the other things that we
important during the mash, you want to keep that grain bed floating, right?
If you're doing a recirculation system, you're just going to let it flow. If you're doing a you know, a non-recirculation system, it's good to get in there and gently stir that mash up, and particularly at the beginning, to make sure you don't have any dough balls or anything else in there. So that's called the dough-in, and it's important to get in there and, you know, gently stir and make sure that you don't have any dough balls, because that that grain essentially then is useless. The water's not getting to it. So that can make a variance in your efficiency. I'm trying to think of some of the other things I run into. But that's the common one, is flowing wort through your grain bed.
Mr. Palmer, we've only covered really sort of to the beginning of the boil. Can you walk us through perhaps the rest of the brewing process real quick?
Sure. Well, like I said, you know, when you get to the boil, this is where we're cooking the wort, we're cooking the beer, and we're developing a lot of the flavor compounds that we expect in our beer. We generate these flavor compounds called Maillard reaction compounds. They are the browning reactions that give flavors to baked bread, to roasted meat, to chocolate and coffee, you know, in the grain. All of these compounds are developed, a lot of them are developed first in the malting process with the malts, but also during the boil when we're boiling the wort. And we're also getting hop isomerization, getting bitterness from our hops and flavor and aroma compounds during the boil. And then at the end of the boil, we are often doing additional hop additions, such as hot steeping of the hops, or otherwise known as whirlpool additions. And then during fermentation, we can also do additional hop additions and add them as dry hops during fermentation and after fermentation to bring out different compounds. It's interesting. We've learned a lot about hops in the last 5 years, and we've changed how we use hops a lot in the last 5 years. The introduction of beer styles such as Hazy IPA or New England IPA have demonstrated that when you add the hops and how you add the hops and the type of hops you add can have profound impacts on beer flavor and aroma. So I guess I'm going off on a tangent, but those are some of the things we can talk about.
There's a lot of topics to cover. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even the temperature you add the hops makes a difference.
Yes. Yeah,
absolutely. Okay. Well, Mr. Blickman, can you give us some closing tips for brewers looking to move to all grain?
One of the things that helped me the most was reading, and now when that was, you know, in the dark days, way before YouTube. And Palmer's book is great. Not to puff John up, but that's what I like about Palmer's book, is it starts from the very, very basic and will take you as advanced as you care to go. So it's a great reference to read back on. There's a lot of online videos, and there's also a lot of fun classes you can go to, homebrew clubs you can go to learn from other brewers. So that to me, one of the fun things about the hobby has been there's always things to learn. And people keep coming up with new things to learn. And to me, that's been part of the fun part of the hobby. And it's been really fun for me, and I'm sure John and Brad as well, to share that knowledge with the new brewers coming in and, you know, just continue to grow all that new stuff that largely comes from the home brewers that we're figuring out. So.
And Mr. Palmer, perhaps you can sum it up and also tell us a little bit of where can people sign up for the class near the end of March?
Okay. Well, the BYO boot camps are held every year, the location moves around the country. This year, they're going to be held in Denver, March 26th through the 28th, at the Embassy Suites Hilton in downtown Denver. And so you can sign up at the BYO.com website, or just Google BYO Bootcamp. These classes are a really good way, like I said, to have time to ask lots of questions from the various experts that are speaking. excuse me, I got a bit of a cough. Brad's going to be there. John and I are going to be there. I'm going to be doing an all-day water class. We're also giving one-hour talks on Friday, you know, that give you an overview of everything that will be covered at the conference. And I think the question you asked John a minute ago, you know, how do you get into this? And, you know, just seeing someone conduct an all-grain brew for the first time answers so many questions and anxieties that you may have. I've met so many people that said, "Oh yeah, I read your book and I've watched stuff on YouTube." And it's like, "So have you done it yet?" And they're going, "No, I haven't done it yet. I still want to learn more." And it's like, just do it. Just try it. You know, it's not going to blow up. You know, it's the worst that's going to happen is you're going to make beer. Going to these classes, going to these boot camps, and getting the chance to see the mashing processes, the lautering processes firsthand will, you know, if you've never done this before, will really open your eyes and you'll see how easy it really is.
Yeah, I'll be teaching two classes there as well for anybody who wants to sign up. I'm doing an intermediate recipe design and an advanced recipe design, where we'll be going in quite a bit of depth on ingredients, techniques, and all kinds of stuff. So looking forward to that. And I get to see my good friends, John and John, here, right?
Yeah.
It's always a good thing. Yeah. It's kind of fun.
I'm trying to remember some of the other topics. There's hops, and John, you're doing one on water.
There's usually a barrel one on sour beers, I think. There's a lot of topics covered, yeah.
Yeah, Kara's doing yeast ranching again. And
Chris White will be there. Chris White will be there talking about yeast as well, I think.
Going to be
a good event. So so folks, sign up now at the BYO, just brew your own website. You can look up BYO Bootcamp. Well, thanks again for coming on the show. Really appreciate you taking the time. I got John Palmer coming to us from the West Coast. It's early in the morning there, right, John?
Yeah, it's 7:30, 8 o'clock here.
And Mr. Blickman, I think, is in the middle of Indiana somewhere, right?
Yep, still on the East Coast time, though.
On East Coast time, that's good. And, of course, I'm coming to you from beautiful Northern Virginia. Thanks again for coming on the show, though, guys. Appreciate it.
Our pleasure. Yeah, looking forward to seeing you next month.
So, again, my guests today were Mr. John Palmer, author of the top-selling book in the world called How to Brew, as well as John Blickman, CEO and founder of Blickman Engineering. Thanks again, guys.
You're very welcome.
Glad to be here.
Well, a big thank you to John Palmer and John Blickman for joining me this week. Thanks also to Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. They're currently offering 20% off their all-access subscription pass, with access to videos, brewing courses, exclusive articles, and the amazing Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Go to beerandbrewing.com/beersmith to get your all-access pass today. Again, that's beerandbrewing.com/beersmith. And also the BrewEasy, brew big in small places with the best all-grain, ultra-compact system available. BrewEasy's revolutionary setup includes batch sparge efficiency, brew-in-a-bag simplicity, and the work clarification of a rim system. It's easy to set up, easy to operate, and easy on the eyes. Electric and propane models are available. It's also the system I personally brew on. Visit BlickmanEngineering.com for more information. Again, that's BlickmanEngineering.com. And finally, I converted the BeersmithRecipes.com website to support mobile devices and also added the majority of the Beersmith brewing and unit conversion tools to the site. Subscribers to Beersmith can access over 17 brewing tools online from any device, and anyone with an account can browse tens of thousands of beer recipes. Visit BeersmithRecipes.com from your phone or computer to learn more. Thank you for listening. I hope you have a great brewing week.